Welcome to the Awakened Collective, where we explore the topics of love, spiritual consciousness, and our divine purpose on this planet. Join us as we uncover the truth that our thoughts shape our reality. Welcome to the Awakened Collective. I'm Rick Gregory, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight with you. So glad you could join us, and thank you to Audio Alchemy Productions and Daniel Anderson for the gift that they are to the world. I always want to remind you at the beginning of every podcast that you are the divine extension of your Creator's love on this planet. You have never been separated from your Creator, and we have never been separated from one another. I have an amazing guest with us tonight. We have the Reverend Dr. Caleb J. Lines with us. Caleb is an ordained minister with standing in the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, and the United Church of Christ. He currently serves as the senior minister of University Christian Church in San Diego, California, and as the co-executive director of ProgressiveChristianity.org, and as the co-host for the Moonshine Jesus Show. He has a passion for pursuing social justice for the marginalized, demonstrating the good news of God's radically inclusive love and proclaiming a relevant message for today's ever-changing world. So, not unlike what we desire to do here. Awaken hearts to love, elevate collective consciousness, and transform the human journey. I have found Caleb, I hope it's okay that I call you that, Caleb's teaching,
absolutely,
his preaching, his posts on social media, filled with love and truth to set straight some crooked thinking that I certainly have had in the past, and I am both humbled and honored to have him here with us tonight. Welcome, Caleb.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, Rick. It's great to be here with you.
So glad to have you, and I would love it if you could start us off with a little bit of your personal faith journey, what the road was like leading up to where you are in this role you're in today, serving humanity the way you do.
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of folks who come into the doors of my congregation or who encounter my ministry through ProgressiveChristianity.org are folks who have had to do a lot of deconstruction, folks who have grown up in kind of toxic faith environments. And certainly one of the roles that I've seen myself playing is helping folks to deal with that toxicity that they have had to deal with. That, however, was not really my faith experience. So I grew up in a small little church in rural Missouri, and somehow, in some way, in rural Missouri, was a part of a progressive congregation. And so the first place that I heard about acceptance of LGBTQIA plus folks, for instance, was actually in that church in rural Missouri. And so that wasn't a message that I was hearing out in the world. My society around me was a very homophobic place, very transphobic place, and even a racist place. And so the place where I was hearing about love and acceptance and kindness and care was at church. And so I think that kind of formed me. And I had this pastor who was very progressive, and he had this weekly newspaper column, and he would write about progressive theological issues, and the editor of the paper happened to go to our church, so he let my pastor do this. And the pastor would write these progressive columns and would always get himself into trouble with the conservative ministers in town, which was pretty much all the other clergy. And so my example for ministry was that model, was speaking truth, speaking about compassion, speaking about care and peace and justice, even whenever other Christians around us were not really open to that. Wow. And so I think maybe that's one of the reasons that I felt called to ministry, or I felt like ministry might be a good fit, was because when I thought about where in my limited field of experience where I saw good things happening in the world, it was actually the church that was doing it. And for me, it was like, you know, the more I've encountered other types of churches, the more I think, wow, I was really lucky that I was in a place where the church was actually the church, because there are so many places where the church isn't the church. And so I, maybe around the time I was in middle school, I was doing kind of social justice work with my congregation, and I was on this trip to Washington, D.C., and we were working for kind of legislative change, and we were thinking about the way that systems impact poverty, and I thought, I think this might be where I'm supposed to be. This is the kind of work that I'm supposed to do. And so I knew from a relatively young age that ministry was the place where I thought I ought to be. And so I went even into high school knowing that ministry was probably what I was going to do. Although whenever I said I wanted to be a pastor, you know, a lot of people had ideas about what that was going to be that weren't necessarily what I had in mind, and certainly not the kind of theology that I had even from that young age. But I went into high school even knowing that I wanted to go into ministry. But then when it was time for me to go to college, instead of going to a religious college or even a private college where they could teach confessional religion, I decided that I wanted to go to a secular university, a public university, because I wanted to learn a non-confessional approach to the biblical text. I wanted to actually study the history of the text and then let that history inform my theology. Mm-hmm. Instead of the other way around, which is the way that I feel like that happens most of the time, is that people come with their preconceived notions. I mean, we all do that to some extent, but people come with their preconceived notions and they let that influence the way they think about the history of the text. And I don't think that that's helpful. Yeah. So that wasn't my experience. I learned about the way that the Bible was put together. I learned religious history. I learned about the movements within Christianity. And that influenced the way that I developed my theology. And so then when I went off to seminary at Yale Divinity School, a lot of people, as they were exposed to the historical critical method for the first time, and they began to kind of deconstruct the text, they really struggled, you know, that they felt like their faith was falling apart. And I never really had that in the same way, because my faith was built in a little bit different way, that all of the things that people really were clinging to, things like, say, Jesus' divinity or ideas of the Trinity or ideas of biblical inerrancy, were things that really I never believed. They were never really a part of my field of experience. And so when I got to seminary and other folks were being exposed to these other ideas for the first time and were trying to figure out what that meant for them, for me, it was just stuff that was enriching my faith, because my faith was built on a little bit something different. And so I then was ordained and grew up in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, and so was ordained into the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, a non-creedal denomination, and hold standing now in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, the United Church of Christ, and the Progressive Christian Alliance. But all the places I've served in ministry have been places where they have allowed me the freedom of the open pulpit to say the things that I need to say and feel like I'm supposed to say. And particularly this congregation that I'm serving now, University Christian Church, has really allowed me the freedom to say, hey, look, I know that there are a lot of traditional beliefs about a lot of things. And based on the things that I've learned, here's what I think. And here's how I think a lot of maybe Orthodox Christianity really misses the original message of Jesus. And so I've appreciated that freedom from the pulpit at University Christian Church, and certainly the role with progressivechristianity.org that has taken its mission as claiming a more authentic message of Jesus. And so I think progressive Christianity is a bit of an interesting term, because we're trying to progress towards, I think, the reign of God that Jesus talked about. But in doing that, it is striving to claim maybe the original intent of Christianity, which is what Jesus talked about, right? Breaking down barriers, achieving peace through the presence of justice, speaking the truth and love to the principalities and the powers, calling out hypocrisy where you see it. And so so I've certainly appreciated my role there as well. So that's maybe more than you wanted to know about my faith journey, but that's kind of how my faith developed and how I ended up where I am today.
I think that was fascinating. I mean, the foundation that you had, it's nothing short of a miracle for me to hear that, you know, a little church in Missouri, the way that you were taught in that little church, when, like you said, all around you, you couldn't find that message anywhere, but you're in that little church, mm-hmm. hearing something like that many years ago is just, to me, that is, it's miraculous. And that foundation that you went into your education with, that you said other people were wavering because their faith was being shaken by some of what they were hearing and understanding. And yet your approach to gain the knowledge that you had was different. And it just seems divine guidance to me. That's all I get when I hear that. There was something at work to lead you on that path.
I was certainly fortunate to have had the pastor that I did, the community that I had. And not to say that everyone in that small little rural church was a progressive Christian, or they probably, a lot of folks held on to very traditional views of things, but they were also open-minded. And that's one of the things I really have appreciated about the Christian Church Disciples of Christ being a non-creedal tradition, is that we have, and the United Church of Christ does as well, this ideal of a responsible freedom of belief. And sometimes people say, oh, well, that means you can believe whatever you want. But that's not really mm-hmm. true. It's not just a complete freedom of belief. It's a responsible freedom of belief, which means that you do theology as community together, and that your theology has to be able to stand up to intellectual interrogation.
Yeah.
And if it can't stand up to intellectual interrogation, then what kind of theology is that? And so I think it's a willingness to be to have discourse, a willingness to be able to converse about things, and to have your mind changed. And I mean, that's for me too, right? Just mm-hmm. because I believe things doesn't mean that I'm right. It just means that it's what I believe based on my own life experience. Yes. And so I think we all ought to always be open to the perspectives of others, that part of being open-minded and having an intellectually honest faith means being willing to consider the fact that we might be wrong at times. And so I definitely am grateful that I grew up in that kind of environment where I could also see demonstrated that even when people didn't always agree 100%, that they stayed in community together and they talked to each other about God and about politics and all of the things. And man, if we could do that as a society, we'd be in so much better shape, wouldn't we?
I know it. And this, you know, like you said, just being willing to question, you know, and I wasn't for the longest time because I, you know, I believed that I had cornered the market on truth, you know, for years. Mm-hmm. I was your typical Bible thumper, wanting everybody to see things the way that I saw them, believe them the way that I believed them. And, you know, I had a wake-up call. You know, it was through a lot of suffering that I came to an awareness of more of what the truth that's in me, I guess, is the way I can put it. You know, just being willing to look at what I had come to believe, challenged by a lot of things that I read and a lot of contemplation. Even some of your posts where you talk about, you know, I was raised to believe that Satan, the devil, was an entity that we were always at war with. And yet, as I would read scriptures like, you know, when Jesus was tempted, you know, to turn the stones into bread or to cast himself down. And, you know, I thought that to me sounds like he's dealing with ego like we deal with. Mm-hmm. And yet he transcended it, and he transcended every human limitation and tells us that greater things would we do. Are we perhaps not understanding that he's just showing us, you know, that way, truth and life is already in us, and that we too can overcome those things. You know, it was a lot of questioning.
That. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That it sounds like I love that reframing of those things. And you're so right that there are there are so many folks who carry around all this inherited theology or this embedded theology, the stuff that we are taught, and it can be hard to let go of that stuff, even when we know it's harmful theology. And so one of the conversations that I've had a few times this week is, you know, with the solar eclipse, there was all this talk about the rapture,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Did you hear some of that talk about the rapture?
Yeah.
And so a lot of folks in my congregation, as I said, are people who have come from very fundamentalist backgrounds who largely have come because the church is open and affirming. And some of these folks talk about how they grew up with this idea of the rapture, right? This idea that was invented in the 19th century and is not a biblical idea, that for most of Christian history, Christians would have had no idea what you were talking about if you talked about the rapture. Yes. And so these folks in my congregation have talked about how they would wake up in the middle of the night, like out of nightmares, afraid that everyone else had been raptured away and that they were the only ones left. Mm-hmm. And how much that traumatized them as children. And I think this is one of the things that Christianity does really badly, is that we've had this bad theology that we have peddled as if it is actually the teaching of Jesus, and it's caused a ton of trauma. And I mean, Rick, certainly I think we can say the same about the way that people have misinterpreted verses and use them to oppress people because of their sexual orientation or gender identity.
Absolutely.
People who take verses completely out of context, who don't have any idea what they actually meant in their context, and use them as clobber passages to bash people over the head.
Yep.
And I think that one of our responsibilities as Christians in the 21st century is to say, actually, all of that stuff is crap, and you should throw out all of that theology because it's killing people. Mm-hmm. It literally is killing people. And so, yeah, I appreciate the reframing of some of those scripture passages that often lead to very harmful theology.
Yeah, and as I continue on this journey, just more and more scriptures come to mind that I believed one way and see them differently today. And I'm thinking, you know, perhaps some people are almost fearful of letting go of what they believe to be true. I know for me, the struggle was, oh my gosh, I've spent more than 20 years believing this. You know, it's like I've invested so much of who I am and, you know, my energy and time, and I was so sure. And I think that might get in the way of some people letting go of that or being willing to question it. But there is life on the other side that we're not experiencing until we do question it. You know, and we talked about that together with, you know, the questions are the most important part of the journey.
That's such a great point, that it can feel like if you're letting go of certain beliefs, like it's letting go of everything, you know, like, and I think that's something that a lot of people have to deal with when they're, you know, what we call deconstructing, whenever they're letting go of pieces of theology, that a lot of people think, well, then I don't believe anything anymore. I had once someone reach out to me, a friend from college who knew that I was doing the ministry thing, and said, hey, look, I've been really questioning my beliefs that I grew up with. I grew up in a very conservative tradition, and I've been thinking about that. I don't think I believe any of that stuff anymore. And she said, how can you be so sure that there's a God? Because I'm not even sure that I believe in God anymore. And I said, well, what God is it that you don't believe in? And she began to define kind of this old guy in the sky God who's pulling all the strings, you know, who has everything planned out for us, who controls every aspect of our lives, and who is getting ready to send Jesus back to save the world and stuff. And I said, oh, well, you know, I don't believe in that God either. That's not a God that I believe in. And I said, maybe the first thing to do is to think about what we mean when we say God. And I think that a lot of people, whenever they think about God, are thinking about this kind of old guy in the sky God who's up there attentive to our prayers and seeing how it fits in the cosmic timeline. And that's just not the way that I think about God. And I don't think it's ever really been the way that I think about God. Yeah. You know, that I tend to think about God as this cosmic energy that connects us all, and as this divine mystery, and that we are all connected by this cosmic force of love. And it's hard to define beyond that, because, you know, all we can do is use our human understanding, that which we have, to try and describe that which is ultimately ineffable, that is beyond our description. And so I think that one of the things that is important as people are deconstructing is to recognize that, look, this doesn't have to be something that means we don't have faith in anything anymore. It just means that we are reframing the way that we think about faith. And Rick, you probably have read this, but Marcus Borg's book, Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time, he talks about three really important steps for doing this. He says that there is pre-critical naivete, critical thinking, and post-critical naivete. And he says that pre-critical naivete is a stage in which we accept everything that is told to us because someone in authority told it to us. So things like the world was created in 7 days. Like, we might believe that because our parents told us, or a preacher or a Sunday school teacher or someone that we trust and know, that they tell us, okay, the world was literally created in 7 days. And as a kid, we might just believe that. But then we eventually enter this stage of critical thinking where we're, say, in science class and we're learning that actually the Earth was formed over several billion years. And that doesn't quite compute with what I thought I knew about how the world came to be. And so that critical thinking stage, I think, is the stage in which people often deconstruct and say, well, you know, if the world wasn't created in 7 days, then that means that story is false and the Bible is false and God isn't real and all of that. But I don't think that that's necessarily the only conclusion to come to in that stage of critical thinking. And so Borg talks about then a third stage, post-critical naivete, where after we have recognized that, okay, yeah, the world wasn't literally created in 7 days, that it was formed over several billion years, that we begin to ask the question about what does that mean? That can a story be true without being factual? And to accept that, okay, well, this is an etiology, the first creation story. And it's showing us that God is present in the midst of all things, and that God is with us through all things. And so so post-critical naivete helps us to enter this stage where we can see truth in stories, even if they're not factual. Mm. And so I think if more folks are able to do that, then it can feel less like the world is falling apart.
Yes.
As we let go of some of these ideas that we've held on to for a long time.
And I have not read that book, but I will be ordering it after this podcast. That sounds wonderful. It really, really does. Yeah, I was thinking as you were talking about, I've heard it said that the biggest obstacle to finding God is the concept of God, because we all have so many things that we have adopted, conditioned by, you know, all kinds of teachings and those in authority, a lot of injury has been done. And then, like you said, we just want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, that's not necessarily the right thing to do. Or that, you know, I just also tell folks in the program, and by program I mean in recovery, I have sponsees and a lot of folks, we lose a lot of folks at like that third step when we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. And a lot of folks, because of their trauma, walk out the door with that. And so for folks that struggle, what we typically do is have them sit down and, like you mentioned, rather than the reverse, but we say, make a list of what the characteristics would be of a God that you could do business with. And, you know, they'll begin to make a list of, you know, kind, loving, forgiving. And, you know, I'll have my list over here. And, you know, by the end of that list making, and we compare our lists, we find how similar they are, you know, that and where do those attributes come from, I would say to them. They came from within me, and that is where the kingdom of God is in me. So if I would just listen to what's in me, and it comes out on paper, what I believe the God that I can do business with is like. Sure enough, that is the God that I serve today, you know? And I just, there's a lot of that trauma out there. In fact, this week, actually a couple of weeks ago now, I wanted to ask you this, and I'm sure that you deal with this, and you've already mentioned that folks come into your church, and even though perhaps you have not, you didn't grow up in the same kind of environment, they come in with trauma. I had an old church friend, as I said earlier, before we started the podcast, I've only got a handful of those left, but that saw some of my posts that I was sharing and basically came out and said, Rick, do you not believe in hell anymore or the second coming or the rapture? And then proceeded to say that I had fallen and that I had been bewitched. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice for folks that may be dealing with that as they are deconstructing and still have people in their lives that are, I don't fault her for that. It's where those people are at right now, but that what do they do in those situations, or what do they say to folks that might be expressing a concern, about their soul, quote unquote?
Yeah, it's very interesting and hurtful and harmful. And I think one of the other things that I've frequently heard people say is that even after giving up some idea, like, say, the rapture or hell, that they're often, if we have this inherited theology, that theology that we've been taught, that even if we kind of intellectually don't believe in that anymore, a lot of times emotionally we still might, and there might be a small part of us that says, but what if that's true? What if they're right? And what if by doing X or not believing in Y, I'm condemning myself to not be raptured or to an eternity in hell? And so I think that a lot of times that is one of the psychological things that is going on whenever we have these conversations, is that we sometimes can have that own self-talk about what our own future is or whether we've made the right decision. You know, I think that to a certain extent, you know, you have to decide how much you want to engage in theological conversation. And certainly if people are coming at you and telling you you're going to hell, you know, you have to decide which of those relationships are ultimately life-giving and which ones aren't. And that can be a very difficult thing to do. And, you know, it could also be conversations where we sit down and say, hey, look, I love you. I really want to remain in relationship with you. And I cannot stomach any more of your theological stuff. So if we're going to stay in relationship together, you're going to have to not say that. Or else I'm going to set a firm boundary here. And the boundary is that we're just not going to be able to communicate. Yeah. And, you know, I've had to do that with people as well, who want to tell me whatever, that I'm going to hell, or, and it's some, and, you know, it doesn't bother me if it's people I don't know, but often if it's, you know, people with whom I've had a relationship, I've had to cut them off in social media or whatever and said, you know what, if we're going to have a real relationship offline, I can't see any of your stuff. It's just not going to be conducive.
Yeah.
So I think though, if we're talking about people who maybe aren't people that we have to stay in relationship with, or, you know, aren't our, our immediate family that we're going to have to live with, then I think one of the things that we can do as Christians, the more we learn about this kind of stuff, is to push back on some of that stuff. So I think one of the reasons that the religious right has had the corner on the Christianity market is because a lot of Christians haven't wanted to confront any of that. You know, ultimately what we've wanted to do is kind of come to church and sing nice hymns with nice people and go about our lives. And mainline Protestants, I think in particular, which of course is where I find myself on this religious spectrum, have thought that, you know, that this was really a minority position or really wasn't even worth responding to, which clearly was not the right thing to do and was also not accurate. And so I think those of us who have studied this, one of our responsibilities is to speak out about things that people are saying that are ultimately harmful. So, for instance, this week when we see the rapture, to say, well, actually, did you know that that wasn't in existence until the 19th century, that's not something that Jesus would have known about, or even the idea of hell, to push back and to say, well, you know, for most Jews didn't believe in hell and still don't, and the Old Testament doesn't seem to have a concept of hell, and Jesus didn't actually say the word hell. He used the word Gehenna, and that was a place. And so I think that if we push back on people, I think that's important. Not necessarily that people will change their minds, because people frequently don't change their minds if they're not open to conversation. But I think changing the narrative is really important, because people think you have to believe in that stuff. Yeah. And I'll even get people in my congregation who will say, wait, you don't believe in hell? And I'll say, no, I don't believe in hell. I don't believe in the literal devil. And you don't have to either. If you do, okay. You know, you have the right to believe whatever you want. But think about what that means. What kind of theology does that lead to when we think that God would condemn whole groups of people to eternal suffering without any chance of reconciliation? What is that, the God that you follow? Because it's not the God that I follow. I mean, I think that if we talk about those things, if we push back and we help people to see that just because it's kind of been in the water that you have to believe those things, doesn't mean that those teachings are actually authentic to Jesus. It just means that that's what people have been teaching.
Right. And, you know, you can do that in kindness and in love.
Sure.
You know, just share your truth. I mean, we do it in the rooms of recovery all the time. We share our experience. We share our strength and our hope and where that comes from. And, you know, it clicks with folks. And they begin to ask, they want to know more, you know, but when you come at people in anger, you know, that's when that faucet gets turned off and they don't want to hear it. But just living our authentic selves and being who we are in the world, sharing what we believe to be true and kindness and love, it opens up people's ears. And we're expecting folks to, I know I want to look at what I believe to be true all the time and be willing to reevaluate and to change. And the way that I'm doing that today is with new information, with information that I'm receiving. So folks need information to be able to then go back and look at what they believe and compare it to what they're hearing. And so they're not going to get there without folks sharing the truth that they see today, you know, which is what you're doing, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah, and I love that idea of, you know, it's not mean to share these things. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind and loving and compassionate. I mean, like, if we really say that we believe Jesus is our best teacher or the Messiah or whatever it is that we confess Jesus to be, then I would think that as Christians, we would want to strive to follow his teachings as accurately as we can.
Yes.
And so if scholarship has told us that pieces of what has become Christian theology are not really authentic to the teachings of Jesus, I think it's really good to say that, because a lot of these ideas have really harmful consequences. And so we talked about, say, the trauma that comes from thinking that your soul might get raptured up or not if you don't behave in quite the right way, or that if you make one little mistake, you might spend eternity in hell, or that if you don't deny your sexual orientation and gender identity and you strive to live authentically, that you might be condemned to an eternity of hell or something like that. Like, that's really, really harmful theology. Yes. that leads people to live lives that aren't as their authentic selves. And it's not because of anything that they've done. It's because the church and Christians have misinterpreted Jesus's message to the point that we have made it virtually unrecognizable in places from Jesus's actual teachings. Yeah. And so I think it's actually loving and compassionate to say, hey, look, these ideas really weren't founded on the teachings of Jesus. And if we really want to follow Jesus, let's acknowledge that. Yeah. Let's acknowledge that Jesus seemed to call this kind of stuff out. And so, yeah, I agree with you, Rick. I think that that's actually a loving and compassionate thing to do, and that you can do that without saying, well, you're wrong and I'm right. Yeah. Or you can say, well, you know, my experience has not been that, and here's why. And that is a loving and compassionate and caring thing to do.
Yeah. And that is what you're doing. And I am so grateful for you. I read in a book from one of my favorite authors, I wanted to run this by you and get your thoughts on it, that all the perceived darkness and evil in the world, the fact that mankind has been at war 93% of recorded history, can be traced back to human beings incorrectly believing that they are separated from their creator. Would you agree with that?
You know, yeah, I think that if we see God as a part of all life, and if we see all human beings as a reflection of the divine image, it gets a lot harder to think of your neighbor as inherently fundamentally different, evil, and not of God. And I think, you know, that whenever Jesus was asked about the greatest commandment, he said, you know, love God, love neighbor. And I think one of the things that meant was that we ought to see God in every person and every neighbor, that the way God is made manifest in our world is through the presence of others. And then, you know, in the Gospel of Luke, he was asked further what that meant, and he told the very familiar story of the Good Samaritan, which, you know, was the story of a foreigner who was looked down upon by the Judeans, and he was saying that God is actually present in the people that you don't expect, the people you don't like, the people you don't want to love, and you have to love them too, because that's God. And we're supposed to love even our enemies. And so I think that, yeah, one of the reasons that human beings get ourselves into trouble is that we tend to embrace kind of this tribalism where we put ourselves into groups of thinking that we are getting together everyone who's just like us, and that all the other people are wrong, forgetting ultimately that we are all a part of God's creation and all created in God's divine image. And I think that that's going to be something important for us to remember during this year. This is 2024. It's an election year. And we're going to see people, as we already have, divided in camps. And I think one of the things that does is that it really closes down our ability to listen to other people and our ability to see God in the faces of other people. And certainly I think that there is something to be said about calling out injustice in the world where it is perpetrated. And I think that there is, I think that certainly say that Donald Trump is perpetrating hatred and things like that. And so I think it's important to call those things out. I also think it's important for us not to forget that every human being is created in God's divine image. And so, yes, I think that whenever we lose that realization, it leads to problematic stances, it leads to problematic theology, and it certainly leads to division between people.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I wanted to talk to you about what you have going on. So you are the co-executive director with ProgressiveChristianity.org, and you have a podcast with them called The Moonshine Jesus Show.
Yes.
That would have raised some eyebrows years ago for me in my church. Tell us about that.
Sure. So I run ProgressiveChristianity.org with Mark Sandlin, who's Presbyterian minister in North Carolina, and our director of operations is Deb Grady. And so Mark and I do a weekly podcast called The Moonshine Jesus Show. And the way it works is we're both nerds, and so we are especially nerdy about sci-fi, fantasy, superhero stuff. And so we watch pop culture, especially within those genres. We pour ourselves a themed cocktail to talk about it. And then we geek out about the shows for a while. And then we talk about the theology and politics that you can find in those pop culture staples. And in doing so, we hope to provide kind of an approachable way of thinking about theology, and certainly kind of a primer on progressive Christian theology, so that people can kind of experience what progressive Christian theology is in a way that maybe is a little bit more approachable. So, for instance, this week we talked about X-Men 97, and we talked about the superheroes and the X-Men and the feelings of marginalization there and all of that kind of good stuff. So we enjoy drinking together and talking about theology and politics and some of our favorite shows. So that's been going on. I think we're in our third season now, and we've enjoyed that. BuzzFeed named that the top progressive Christian podcast. So we have enjoyed being able to
awesome.
Do that.
Awesome. I am going to have to check that out. Who came up with that? Did you come up with that on your own or?
You know, so this podcast actually was Mark's originally. It existed in a previous iteration, and so he had done it for a little while and then had taken a long break, and we were saying, well, you know, I think we should do a podcast together. Let's think about how we could make progressive Christianity approachable, and we were just kind of brainstorming, and we came up with the idea that maybe we should bring back the Moonshine Jesus show. That was something that appealed to both of us, and so we brought it back and have been doing it ever since. So we've really enjoyed that. We do it every year at the Wild Goose Festival. And most of the time, we do the podcast kind of like this, where we're in different locations. But a couple times a year, we get together in person and do it together. And that's always a lot of fun as well.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So, and you have a book entitled The Great Digital Commission, which I think you've mentioned. I just got it, started reading that, and you also have a new book coming out called Awakened. It's a 52-week progressive Christian devotional, so I wanted you to tell us a little bit about your books.
Sure. So the Great Digital Commission is my doctoral dissertation, and it is about how to do digital church. But it's not just a how-to guide, because how-to guides are things that are almost instantly outdated. And so it is a theological examination of what happens when you do digital church. And There are a lot of things to consider when thinking about that, including the mental health impacts that using social media has. But I think that one of the arguments in the book is that you can create authentic community if it's done intentionally through digital media. And so it is not just a how-to guide, but it is really a theological examination of how you can create meaningful digital ministry and the opportunities that has for all kinds of churches, but particularly progressive Christian churches. My new book is called Awakened, a 52-week progressive Christian devotional, and I'm really excited about this book. So I'm often asked for advice on where people can go to find a progressive Christian devotional, and it's kind of hard to give people advice on where they can go to find that. And most of the devotionals that are out there have very conservative, even fundamentalist theology. And so I started thinking about that gap and thinking, you know, a lot of times progressive Christianity has this reputation for being all intellectual and without spiritual components at all. And I just don't think that that's true. And so I've picked 13 progressive Christian themes. So for instance, climate change, LGBTQ plus inclusion, faith and science, questioning of beliefs, reign of God in opposition to empires of the world, just different things that progressive Christians believe. And there are 4 weeks on each theme. So 13 themes, 4 weeks on each theme. And each devotional is structured in this way, that there's a scripture verse. There is a meditation where I talk about what that means in its context and what that means for us today in a kind of an approachable way, but a way that is informed by biblical scholarship. And then reflection questions that people can either use personally or that they can use in a small group. We're going to use them in small groups in my congregation. And then a spiritual practice. And so each four-week section has a different spiritual practice. And I think a lot of people really long for spiritual practices, but don't really know how to engage in those in a very meaningful way. And so I walk people through a variety of different spiritual practices. And so each week is kind of set up like that. And the thought is that people read the book at the beginning of the week, and then later in the week, preferably midweek, like on Wednesday, I have a video that goes along with that. And in that video, I talk more about the theme and I walk people through the spiritual practice. So I'm really excited about that. Nice. It's available for pre-order. And I'm hoping that that's going to be something that is going to be very meaningful to people who are in different stages of their faith journey, but looking to engage in an authentic, intellectually honest guide through that. And one of the best things about that is that a portion of the proceeds to that go to support the work of Progressive Christianity that is really leading this significant movement towards this authentic, intellectually honest form of Christianity.
The book sounds awesome. And I have pre-ordered mine. I'm going to ask Daniel if he'll put that back up again. If you're watching this on our Facebook page, there is the URL code to a pre-order, Awakened, a 52-week progressive Christian devotional. I have pre-ordered mine from Amazon. Check it out if you're listening by podcast. It's called The Awakened, or Awakened, rather, and it's Reverend Dr. Caleb J. Lines. Check it out on Amazon. Awesome. I wonder, too, you said, you know, folks have a difficult time finding a devotional, a progressive Christian devotional. Where do they go to find a progressive Christian church? Like, how does one identify where they're at?
So one resource is on progressivechristianity.org. We have a list of networked faith communities, and so you can go there. One of the guides that I often give people, because, you know, there are all forms of progressive Christianity, especially in terms of liturgy and what people are comfortable with. And progressive Christianity is really a big tent movement, and people have a variety of different beliefs. Obviously, that's one of the values of progressive Christianity, and also a variety of different ways that they experience meaningful worship. And so if you are connected with a denomination that has an open and affirming arm, some kind of body that says that a church has gone through the work to be fully accepting of people regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, that those open and affirming arms tend to have church finders. And those are really good ways to find a local faith community. And if you're not connected to a church that has an open and affirming body, and maybe you're looking for a different kind of church for that reason, the denominations I'm associated with, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, their LGBT affirming arm is Alliance Q. And the United Church of Christ has an open and affirming arm called the Coalition, the LGBT Coalition. And so if you go on those sources, you can find local churches that have gone through and said that they're open and affirming. And that's usually a pretty good indicator of open-mindedness and a willingness to be more intellectually honest. So that's generally where I point people to if they're looking for more progressive congregations.
That's great. Thank you so much for that wonderful information. And I'm going to ask Daniel if he'll put up our splash screen there for Dr. Caleb. So we've got Reverend Dr. Caleb J. Lines. This is how you can reach out. By the way, I've seen some of his sermons out on Facebook, so make sure that you go and check this out. And you can reach their webpage at www.calebjlines.com. And his Facebook is R-E-V-D-R Caleb J. Lines, Rev. Dr. Caleb J. Lines on Facebook. I'd encourage you to reach out if you have any questions. I went out to the website. It looks great. You can also, I think some of his first book is out there as well with a link to that. But I would really encourage you to reach out to him and check out his services, his posts, his TikToks. They are refreshing to the soul. They have been so refreshing to me. I want to say thank you to our special guest. Thank you, Caleb, for being
thank
with
you,
us
Rick.
Tonight. It has been
absolutely
wonderful having you here. You are a gift to the world, my friend. Keep on doing what you're doing. I was a homegrown. You know, I didn't go to years of Bible college. So I had my experience at 19, got involved in church, and I went to school for music. So I became their music director and worked my way up, and then finally took some courses and started pastor and associate and then senior pastor. And I just am humbled and honored by your knowledge, and it really, really helps for the folks that or maybe at the age like I am and don't plan on going to college to learn what it comes out so naturally, and it just hits home and speaks to my soul. And thank you so much for what you're doing and how you are changing the world, my friend. Thank you for that. Well,
thank you. And thanks for all the work you're doing, Rick. I appreciate you and appreciate the Awakened Collective, and certainly am grateful to be with you today.
Thank you so much, Caleb. And if you are looking to reach out to me or to our site, you can find us at theawakencollective.org. Anything that you would like to know about us is out there. And above everything else, we would want to be of service to you. So if you are struggling in any way, please reach out. We have connections all over the country with therapists. If folks need help that way, I am not a licensed therapist. I am a coach, and I would love to help you that way, but we will get you connected to the right folks. We want you to know that you are loved, that you have never been separated from your Creator, and we have never been separated from one another. We are here for you. So reach out. And would also love a word of encouragement. If you want to just let us know that you're getting something out of this podcast, out of these videos, we'd love to hear that too. Thank you again to Danny Anderson and Audio Alchemy Productions. Love you, my friend. Until next time, my friends, love and kindness always.